tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive.
You're listening to the Thinker Sensitive podcast. This is your host, Chad Graham, with my co-host, Ryan Ragazine, who also produces the show. This is our third episode in our new series on true friendship. In this season of Thinker Sensitive, Ryan and I attempt to offer a thoughtful, reflective examination of both the idea of friendship and the practical outworking of friendship from a Christian perspective. Learn about why friendship is important, what it is, how it takes place, and if and when a friendship should end. Ryan, we've talked about this before. We've talked about in the last episode how, you know, a shared reciprocity in a relationship, a give and take is necessary. We've discouraged against one-sided relationships. How do we navigate friendships when we have deep differences?
I think it requires true tolerance. And maybe in order to define what true tolerance is, I need to start by giving a constructive critique of what we might call contemporary tolerance, or how tolerance is often played out in contemporary society. So in this critique, I want to start with this thesis that contemporary tolerance is often one-sided and hypocritical. That is, it often demands that others change their minds and submit or conform to my ideology, my worldview, my belief system, my opinion on things. It tends to be authoritarian in that way. It's dominating, it's controlling. You know, to use an example from the days of colonialization, of you know, a country coming in, or even Christians coming in to an indigenous culture and trying to enforce their ways of life, their viewpoints, how they do things in a kind of oppressive or violent way. Sometimes contemporary tolerance can kind of have this idea of colonialization, because I'm forcing you, I'm oppressively forcing you to change, to submit, to conform, and it's authoritarian, it's dominating. This is antithetical to freedom and autonomy. It's antithetical to the freedom of belief, the freedom of practice, the freedom of choice. And so in conclusion, contemporary tolerance, in my opinion, is one-sided because only one party is asked to conform, and there's no room for reciprocation. And that's hypocritical because I'm asking someone to be willing to change their mind for me, but I'm not willing to change my mind for that other person. Hmm. So this then would bring us into a definition of what I would call true tolerance. So in contrast,
can we also say at this point that this modern or contemporary idea of tolerance that's so pervasive in our culture in America isn't really tolerance at all, because the key trait of toleration is to be able to preserve your own opinions and thoughts and deeply held beliefs,
right,
while also in the presence of contradictory beliefs held by another person or opinions or ideas.
Right.
So the moment your view or your approach or your perspective encroaches, even persuades or coerces someone else to abandon their belief that's contradictory to your own, on the best view or the worst view, it's not toleration anymore. You've persuaded or you've coerced or you've done anything but tolerated the difference.
Right.
The difference actually has to remain intact in order for toleration to be present.
Yeah.
If the end game of what I'm doing is not to allow you the autonomy and freedom to keep your own idea,
right,
or opinion or belief, then I'm not seeking to be tolerant. I'm seeking to be proselytizing or evangelical or persuasive.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So in contrast to that then, True tolerance, we can say, is not one-sided. It's reciprocal. Both parties tolerate the opinion of the other. It's not hypocritical in the sense that it doesn't demand that someone else do what I'm not willing to do. Both parties participate and enact the same tolerance. Yeah. So it's not one-sided, it's not hypocritical. And so here's our definition of true tolerance. It's a tolerance of divergent opinions. It's a tolerance of opposing viewpoints. It's not a form of colonialization. It's not controlling, dominating. It's not antithetical to freedom and autonomy. It doesn't seek by force to change someone's mind or to force you to submit to what I believe and what I think. It maintains true freedom. It promotes genuine freedom of thought and freedom of belief. And so one kind of practical statement of this is the statement, we can agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Because I'm not forcing you to change your opinion. I'm allowing to keep your viewpoint, and we can just agree to disagree.
Right. And we allow for space for that disagreement to exist even while we remain friends.
Right.
Now, I also think that, you know, a person's deep difference or the two people's deep differences can lead to the erosion of enjoyment of time together. You know, I think of someone like or a pairing like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who it took time and space apart for them to reconcile the relationship. They had so many real and true deep differences, but that mutual respect and that desire to contend for those ideas in a respectful and courteous and tolerant way really led to a fruitful relationship in the end. And it just seems like that's more and more rare. Let's keep moving forward here. We've talked about tolerance now in a completely secular way. How should tolerance be implemented in light of a Christian worldview or perspective?
I really passionately believe in what I would call a Christian ethic of disagreement. I believe that in a friendship or a relationship, we can value one another, respect one another, empathize with one another, and love one another in the midst of disagreement. That if I disagree with you, I can still value your opinion, respect your viewpoint and your mind, and I can seek to stand in your shoes and to empathize with you. And even when I disagree with you, if you're my friend, I still love you. I can love you in the midst of disagreement.
Yeah.
And this is really what I would call a Christian ethic of disagreement. And this understanding enables tolerance between all kinds of people. It's an understanding of tolerance that enables true friendship and companionship between people of all kinds, from all different backgrounds, all different viewpoints and worldviews. So if we follow this kind of thing and live into it, both the atheist and the theist can be friends with one another. They have big time disagreements, big time conflict in worldview, but they can still value one another, respect one another, empathize with one another, and love one another. That's a very noble concept.
Right.
The Muslim and the Christian can be friends because they can love one another. The Republican and the Democrat.
Oh, no. I don't know.
Yeah. Even the Republican and the Democrat. Yeah.
Because the popular notion today is if you disagree with me, you've become my enemy.
Yes.
Which we've already kind of defined this spectrum. Enemy is an extreme position. If you label someone as your enemy.
Yeah.
In our understanding, you and I, we think that enemy is reserved for the person that you can point to direct, objective actions that have taken place, they have initiated for your harm.
Yep.
In order to harm you.
Yes.
With the intent to harm and also with the real effect of harm.
Yep.
People now, you merely disagree with my political philosophy, or even one subset of my entire political philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and you're my enemy. That's what we live in today.
It's awful.
It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no way to live.
It robs us of the beauty and the possibility of a meaningful friendship with someone who comes from a different background, has a different worldview. I think that friendship has this transcendent quality in the sense that it has the power to transcend boundaries, political boundaries, religious boundaries, ethnic boundaries, right? It has this transcendental quality. And I think that friendship is almost maybe at its most powerful or displays its potency in the midst of difference.
Yeah. And then, and also, I think it also uncovers love through the differences. Because, man, when you walk away from a friend who you've been in a heated discussion with all night, true heat is being thrown off on this conversation because there's real difference and there's friction.
Sure.
But at the end of the night, you hug and you're brothers. How satisfying is that? There's trust being built. Yep. There's respect on display. I've walked away from evenings like that just so encouraged. Man, today you might miss out on that experience entirely.
Yeah.
If you sequester yourself to friendship circles that only have like-minded individuals.
Right. I think kind of in conclusion, to bring this together, we have another point that we want to discuss, but in talking about tolerance within a Christian worldview, this isn't just true tolerance that we're talking about. We're talking about true coexistence. So, you know, you've seen those bumper stickers, coexist.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on what an individual means by that, but if your view of coexistence is that religion should abandon all of their distinctive doctrines and beliefs in order that they all agree with one another, that isn't tolerance.
At all.
That's actually intolerance, because you're actually intolerant of religion and you're intolerant of religious freedom of thought and belief. And can I say that if one holds that viewpoint, it's an expression of a kind of secular colonialization of religion.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
It's the secular, it's the non-religious person demanding that religious people conform or abandon their deeply held beliefs and submit to their own thinking and their own views. So it's interesting to me that non-religious people want to tell religious people what they can and cannot believe within the boundaries of their religion. See how true coexistence is then predicated upon true tolerance.
Yes.
Another thing is what we're talking about is true inclusivism. In your friend groups, you welcome people from all walks of life. And this is true diversity, because there's a diversity of backgrounds and belief systems within your friend groups and the people that you hang out with. So this is what we're trying to promote. True tolerance promotes true coexistence and true inclusivism and true diversity.
That's good. So let's move away from formal distinctions for a minute and this idea of tolerance. Because in any relationship you want, obviously you want tolerance. That has to be there. I even think that's a minimal kind of standard. Those bumper stickers that say coexist, and really the idea behind the coexist sticker is that, you know, the pinnacle of our society is merely coexistence. I think that's kind of cheap.
Sure.
I think we need at minimum a coexistence.
Yeah.
What we really want to do is move towards a shared vision of the common good.
Yes.
But this podcast isn't about that bumper sticker, so I'm not going to go there.
Right.
Let's talk about those layers that exist above base tolerance. Maybe things like common interests in relationships. How important is it to share common interests, intrigues, loves, hobbies, things like that? How important is it for two people to have those common interests once you work past deep differences?
I don't think that shared interests are necessary to a friendship, but I do think that they're extremely helpful in developing a friendship, maintaining it, deepening it, because I think that the more shared interests you have with someone, the more opportunities there is there for connection and for bonding. And I'll just say that in my experience, close friends either share a high volume of shared interests or they have mutual primary interests. So, like, growing up, all of my really close friends were people who liked sports just like I did, had a passion for music just like I did, watched, you know, TV shows that I like, movies that I like. And again, I'm not at all trying to promote that we have to have the same interest as another or the same ideas or viewpoints as another. But it does oftentimes help to create those connections and develop and cultivate that bond with someone else.
And you and I have a slightly different take on this.
Yeah.
Ryan tends to think that the number or volume of connection points can outweigh the priority structure of connection points. To put it another way, Ryan thinks there's more potential for two people to grow closer the greater number of connection points that are there. So if I have 10 interests that in common with Ryan, the person who has 20 points of interest with Ryan, they're going to be a better match for a deeper friendship. I tend to think that the prioritization of those interest points, meaning I love the game of basketball. I love it. I love everything about it. There's nothing about a human being dribbling a basketball that I'm not interested in. There's no aspect of that. However, it's not as high on the totem pole for me as theology and philosophy and economics.
Yeah.
So when I meet somebody who has the convergence of interest in theology, philosophy, economics, and basketball, we might have everything else in this life not in common.
Yeah.
We might hold different opinions on every other sphere of life. But if I have those four prioritized points of interest in common, I tend to go really deep, really quick with those individuals. And so, you know, we're describing two sides of the same coin here. But it's interesting, you know, I think maybe personality has something to do with this.
Sure.
Some people are just enamored a little bit more if they find somebody with multiple points of agreement and interest connection.
Yeah.
If you have the quadrifecta of theology, philosophy, economics, and basketball, I'm sold.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting. Mm-hmm. These shared points of interest provide the pathways to eliciting those affections we talked about in the first episode. It's important to have affections for your friends.
Yeah.
And when you find those things in common, they're treasure, I think. Okay, so of course, this mutual interests are important. Of course, being tolerant of deep differences are important. What makes the closest friend, Ryan? How do we identify those friends that are closest to us?
Are you thinking along the lines of values / characteristics? Are you thinking along the lines of, I mean, we just talked about shared interests. So are you thinking more in terms of personality traits?
So I guess I would say, how do we identify? So when we say, you know, Ryan's a close friend of mine.
Sure.
What am I really saying there? I don't think anyone would hear me say that and go, oh, Ryan and Chad have a lot of interests in common.
We do.
We do, right? But that's not what you immediately think of when I say Ryan's a close friend.
No, it's the combination of a lot of the things that we've talked about. It's the combination of we do have shared interests, intellectual interests. We do both like sports. We both like to cook. We like food a lot. So we do have shared interests. But there is also that connection in terms of character, that goodness that Aristotle talked about. We do also have a shared history and shared experience, which helps.
See, that's the aspect I was thinking of. You can have close friends that you haven't had a long duration with, right? You might meet someone and have, you might meet someone or you might derive a friendship out of a shared experience that was deeply profound or impactful. But even still, it tends to be those friends that are with you the longest amount of time that become closest. The friends where you've, again, made more and more of those connection points, where you've seen the person under trial by fire and they've seen you under the same, and that friendship has endured. I'm thinking more of the endurance. Those tend to be the closest of friends, wouldn't you say?
I think so.
Okay.
For sure.
Well, I just wanted to throw that in there because we've never, I don't think we've introduced that at any other point in the podcast. Those friendships that are deeply committed, you know, I try to encourage something in each episode here. You know, maybe you have that friend that you've had forever and you're in the slump right now and you guys haven't been talking or connecting. I'd encourage you to, you know, keep your long-lasting friends. Even if you go through a season of time where it doesn't feel like you're connecting, doesn't feel like you have much in common, maybe you have kids and they don't have kids or
live in different parts
of the country, whatever. Don't give those friends up quite yet. It's really hard to maintain friendships over the course of a lifetime. Keep with it. Keep up the good fight. And that's all the time that we have for this episode on True Tolerance. Be sure to listen to our next episode titled Let's Be Friends. Ryan and I are going to explain the different types of friendship that exists. We're also going to talk about how to make friends. We're also going to talk about ending friendships. Not a very popular topic, but it's a topic we all need to think about. When is it time to end a friendship? This episode is part of a series called True Friendship, available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and more. This is Chad Graham, and we'll see you next time on the Thinker Sensitive podcast.
This episode and all episodes of Thinker Sensitive are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and more. If you wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.